Hello and welcome to W Rated, where we willingly watch the world's worst rated movies. Today, you've joined us on our Road to Razzies, a special run of episodes looking at the nominations for the worst films of 2022, according to the controversial Golden Raspberry Awards. For new listeners, I'm Daisy, and as always, I'm joined by podcast co-creator, host, and editor Claire. Claire, do you want to tell us what film we're talking about this episode?
Today we're looking at Morbius, directed by Daniel Espinosa, released in 2022. It currently has a 16% rating on Rotten Tomatoes for critics, a 71% audience score, and it's rated 5.2 out of 10 on IMDb. Quite a controversial one.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I'm quite surprised by the high audience score on that one, because I think
it's Morbin time.
It is Morbin time. Unless you've been living under a rock, I think Morbius has been just at the centre of culture over the last year.
I told you off
in a bad way.
I watched this with my housemate. So we watched it together yesterday. She doesn't live under a rock. She just lives on a different side of the internet than we do.
And that's true. I'm just conscious of the listeners that we have.
But she had no idea, and it was really embarrassing to have to try and explain what Morbin time
is. Oh. I forget, like, that, you know, my film conversations I have with people are generally, it's an echo chamber essentially, yeah. Isn't it? And then you talk to normal people. You talk to people outside of that circle and you forget how something that's so prevalent in your view of culture just isn't even a speck on their periphery.
And they trolled this company and got them to re-release it. And it was hilarious. And she was just like, okay. And it's like, it had to be there.
A lot, and it's always one of those ones where you say it out loud and you realise, like, how insignificant or silly or something is. But, you know, for purposes of this episode, I think it's a really good point to be talking about that this was memed to death by probably most people that haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
It's Morbin Time became the key catchphrase that never was.
Spring 2022, man. It was a time. It was a Morbin time.
It was all the times. They be Morbin. And because of all of this, these memes, you know, was it Sony specifically? I can't remember.
I think so, yeah.
Sort of saw. Now, this is a lesson. As someone who does social listening for a living, this is a lesson in sentiment and how data doesn't tell you sarcasm, for example. And they thought that all of the positive, seemingly, social coverage meant that they could have a very, very quick cult classic on their hands. Didn't perform at the box office, but all of these people are like loving it. Let's re-release it and try and make some money. And then it bombed even harder than the first.
Yeah. It was rough.
A cautionary tale for marketing people all around, I think.
Absolutely. And I think it goes back to that thing that I think we notice as podcast hosts, and hello to our fellow indie podcast hosters out there. Like, a follow and a like does not always transcribe to listeners, viewers, and everything like that. So yeah, you could have a million people talking about Morbius, mm-hmm. but actually, what's the conversion rate to people that are going to go and see it at the cinema? And it turns out very, very low.
And engagement as well. Yeah. Like, engagement and, like, sort of, the like you say, the volume of conversation does not equal a hit, which is so fascinating. I mean, this was the first time I'd watched it. I hadn't gone to the cinema. I enjoyed the fanfare around it so much that I kind of knew, I just suspected that it wasn't actually as bad as everyone was saying it was, and that it was just, so I kind of didn't want to break the illusion.
I expected it to just be naff. I was like, I assume the trailer looked a bit naff. It's Sony don't have the best run of non-Marvel movies. Saying that, I've still not seen Venom, but you know, I was there for Fantastic Four or Fantastic or whatever it was called.
Fantastic. I actually liked that, and I came out the cinema and opened my letterbox, as I love to do after I've seen a film, and got told I was severely wrong.
You were severely wrong. We've had this argument before.
We have.
You just need to watch The Wig.
The Wig, capital T, capital W. I think I need to go back and see where I went wrong. But I quite like Venom. I hated it the first time I watched the first one. But then I rewatched it. I was like, this is camp. This is great. like it knows it, it maybe it doesn't know what it's doing, but it hits a different box. And
I got the impression that for the second one, again, I've not seen either of them, but I got the impression for the second one, it did know what it was doing.
They leaned into it for sure. And it was crap, but I loved it because it really pushed the relationship and the humor of just the absurdity of what Venom is. And I think, nice segue, this is what this doesn't do. There's no levity, no humor.
So seriously.
That being said, I will preface this as I thought it was fine. Leaning more towards positive than negative, and I just can't be unswayed by expectations, because when we watch these films, I'm expecting the worst. And when they're not, it makes me give them a good score, because I'm like, guys, that wasn't that bad. So you need to tell me they're good, and then I'll be more like honest or unbiased in some way.
I thought this was a bad film. Like, it wasn't so bad I'm screaming and crying and being like, what the hell is this? But like, it just wasn't good. It took itself way too seriously.
Yeah.
It didn't really feel like it ever had any stakes or any tensions.
No.
Not many
people actually died.
No. And it seemed like it went on for days. Like, it felt like it went on for like a really long, but I could never tell when has night been and when has day been.
Oh, I see what you mean. In the universe. I think it was like over a space of like a week or something it took place.
And it was a bit of a thing. And I also, like, me and my housemate Jenny were like, what time is this set in? Is it modern? Is it 10 years ago? Like, there were a lot of like question marks that aren't that important if your story is enveloping and gripping, but because the story wasn't, we just were like,
you're looking for other things to entertain you, I guess.
We noticed the holes. We were like, hang on, what's this? And
I'm curious what made you wonder if it wasn't set in modern time.
My housemate asked. She was like, when is this
that's
set?
Well, that's interesting, but that's good. That's why it's good to have other people's perspective, because I just wouldn't have picked up on that. Something that did bother me, though, is the fact that they tried to pass off Charing Cross as the New York subway.
Well, that was it, because she was like, where is this set? And I was like, I think it's New York. Like, she had a lot of like, who, what, why, where questions.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I realised I couldn't answer them. That's when I was like, oh.
And that's when you know it's a bad film.
Because I was just letting it gloss over me. I was also building a desk at the time. Let's be fair, there's going to be a theme to a lot of these films. I built a jigsaw during one of the Radley films. It's still not done, so that will continue. I built a desk during Morbius. So it's going to be, you know, was the film more or less entertaining than building something
I think that's a good, what's the word? A good way to weigh up. For sure. I tend to view things of how quickly do I remember that I have a phone with more interesting things on them. Because I always sit down with the full intention to be like, just whatever it is, let me be part of it. But I mean, probably about, I think it was maybe 30 minutes, which is relatively good for a film like this. I was just like, what's going on out there? Looking out the window, like, just to look for something else to grab my attention.
I had a lot of, like, and Jenny had a lot of, like, who, what, why, where questions. And we were building IKEA furniture, so in fairness, we were not giving the film 100% of our time. But in the flip side of that, at any point, I could, like, completely miss a scene, and I'd look up and be like, wait, why are they on the roof now? But then I'm like, oh, well, they're kissing because it's a romantic storyline, so she's going to be kidnapped now. Like, I always knew, even though I'd,
you
like...
You didn't even need to watch it.
Yeah.
To kind of know what was going to happen. No, I agree. It was extremely formulaic.
Yeah.
And I agree with you on the stakes part where, you know, you've got, for anyone that doesn't know what the plot of this story is.
Yeah, we just went straight on in.
The thing is, like, you know, when we say in the title of the episode what the film is, you like to think,
I don't listen to podcasts on films I've not watched, so, you know, I just assume.
I don't know. Let us know if you do and you really, really want us to do the plot at the beginning, but I think we always get round to it when it's relevant. is that Jared Leto plays this guy called Michael Morbius, of course, that's his name, and he's dying of an undisclosed illness, like, and he needs to have blood dialysis, like, three times a day. Anyway, he's super intelligent, he's a doctor, and he's looking for a cure. He discovers something in bat DNA that means that they can, like, do something with blood, because they, this certain bats drink blood,
vampire bats.
You can see where this is going. And he, you know, injects himself with the DNA or whatever, and he turns into a vampire. But he did have a friend back from when he was an ill boy, who discovers that he's come up with the cure.
I just need to really interject here, because this is also where the film lost me always instantly. Was his name Miles? Was his name Milo? Was his name Michael? What was his name? Oh. Why did he have so many different names?
So this is one of the bugbears of mine, is that it's just stupid. If you want to call him Milo, call him Milo. His name was Lucian when he joined the hospital.
And then he gives him the thing that... He gives him the name Milo,
as a joke. Because he's like,
I've had four Milos.
I don't even know the original Milo. Yeah. You're just the new one. Like, it's to infer that either... I think the kids die.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I thought they got better, but he's like,
I got the
cure.
Impression that they come in and out and there's no point in getting attached.
So I get that he then calls him Milo, and I don't know, it's kind of like an endearing thing. But then why are other people calling him Milo? That's not his name.
I'm pretty sure the police officers at one point called him Milo, and I was
he wouldn't have Milo on it unless he legally changed his name, but that's just silly.
Thank you. I needed to
But if you're going to just call him, like, have him as... I feel like it had something to do with the comic book, and they've just really fumbled what they want to do with that, because it was just pointless. Just call him Milo, whatever. So he is also ill. He discovers that Michael has come up with a cure, which Michael himself calls a curse, because obviously he becomes a vampire. Morally, he's like, this isn't okay, this is a mistake. So then he takes the seminar. You've got two vampires, and then, of course, one tries to stop the other, because one is a moral good vampire and the other one is a chaotic evil vampire. and that's it, pretty much. And there's a romantic interest.
It's kind of forgotten about and then picked back up and forgotten about and picked back up.
She just doesn't really have anything to do other than be a romantic love interest, which is a shame, because I think she did okay.
That can lead us on to what this film is nominated for, I guess, because that's a good, I guess, one to start on. It's one of the nominations. So it has 5 nominations. It's nominated for Worst Picture, Worst Actor, Jared Leto, Worst Supporting Actress, Adria Arjona, Worst Director, Daniel Espinosa, and Worst Screenplay. And, like, we can get into the others, but I absolutely think the Worst Supporting Actress for Adria Arjona is completely undeserved. She's let down by a weak character and a weak script, and it has nothing to do with her acting ability. It's just a terrible character.
If anything, I think she does a good job because she has crap to work with.
Yeah.
That, if anything, I'm like, this is quite insulting.
Yeah.
I think, and also I was just like, if anything, I think Matt Smith should have the worst supporting actor. He wasn't bad, but if we're going to pick the supporting cast, one of them, it's not her. Like, he played it campy, and that's absolutely fine, and I kind of got what he was going for. I've not really seen him in anything else. I don't personally see... He's not someone that I'm particularly drawn to. So he's not bad by any means, I don't think, given I think it's the screenplay that lets this down. But yeah, I think that was an unfair call out for that one.
Absolutely. And then, we've got Worst Picture, Worst Actor, Worst Director, and Worst Screenplay. Do you want to tackle one of them?
Well, whilst we're talking about the performances, what did you think of Jared Leto?
Well, because I was a defender of Jared in last year's Razzies. This is a return, appearance.
This is a very different performance.
Very different performance. But I felt like he was the only one that understood the assignment in House of Gucci, and everyone else was being way too serious. And I feel like maybe he didn't take my advice. He took everyone else's advice to heart, because, man, he was so serious in this.
Yeah.
He is so serious. There was no charisma. And I get that you're originally playing like someone who's ill, and then you're playing someone who's like dark and brooding. I don't know, man. I've watched tons of vampire shit over the year, and you can have range as a vampire.
He just didn't really have a personality, right?
No, he was a video game avatar. He was moving from plot point to plot point.
Yeah,
no...
that's a really good point. Because it's just like, you are smart, therefore you become doctor.
You are sick, ill, therefore cure.
Therefore you are working to find a cure. And we have to have bats in here.
Yeah.
Because we're making it a comic book film. So it's as if it's just so paper thin.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know why Jared Leto would have particularly been drawn to the project. I mean, this is a few years after he's done DC, so maybe he wanted to kind of reinvent
I felt like he had been tied to this for a while as well.
Oh, okay. So maybe it was before he did the Joker stuff.
I don't know, but I do know that this like took a while to get going, and I think he was always attached.
Yeah. It's just an interesting choice because it doesn't... I'm trying to think. Usually he goes for things that have a little bit of... not that, you know, comic book films and superhero films are any less than, but he does tend to go for stuff with a bit of substance.
A bit more arty or...
A bit arty, yeah. Like, you know, he's done the Blade Runner thing. Mm-hmm. You know, he does go for a range of stuff. So maybe he just wanted, you know, his chance to be a lead in Marvel.
Everyone needs to buy a house.
Yeah, or maybe it is the money, yeah. But I don't know, it's just, like, I don't... particularly, you know, as a cult leader, you think he'd be having chance.
So glad you said it and not me.
I used to love 30 Seconds to Mars, and I used to love Jared Leto. I mean, he looks fantastic for his age.
Oh my god, the Kill video is still up there and like top videos of all time. He's stunning, like all the Shining references. Like,
he's kind of got everything going for him in a movie star department, except being able to connect with audiences.
Well, so I'm going to dip into this brilliant interview from the website UpRocks, which was an interview with Daniel Espinosa, the director. Okay. And I'll probably quote from it more later. It's such a good interview. But so they asked some questions, this from the interviewer. I heard a story about filming and I want to see if this is true. Someone told me that Jared Leto was so committed to playing Michael Morbius that even when he had to go to the bathroom, he would use his crutches and slowly limp to get to the bathroom. But it was taking so long between for pee breaks, a deal was made with him to get him a wheelchair so someone could wheel him there quicker, and he agreed to that. Is this true? Daniel Espinosa. Yes. Interviewer. All right. Daniel Espinosa. Yeah. Because I think what Jared believes, is that somehow the pain of these movements, even when he was playing normal Michael Morbius, he needed, because he's been having this pain his whole life. Even though, as he's alive and he's strong, it has to be a difference. Hey man, it's people's processes. Interviewer. Yeah.
I mean...
Daniel Espinosa. All of the actors believe in processes, and you, as director, you support whatever makes it as good as you can be.
That's very diplomatic, isn't it? I mean, method acting, it's been around for a long time. I don't know enough about it to class, is that in itself
considered method acting?
Yeah. But is it enough, you know? Because is it surface level? Is he just doing it? But is he actually
Are you
learning
asking,
from
was
it?
He drinking blood?
It's like, how, number one, how far do you take it? Number two, like, if that's your, method, that's fine. But I don't know, it's just, you hear all these stories about him and it's just like, I don't want to like assume that it doesn't work, but when you're a bit like, surely you have empathy enough to understand how it would feel, or you could talk to people, or, and maybe he did all that and maybe it does work or whatever, but I don't know, maybe it's because his performances aren't that great and then you hear that, you put them together,
and I think
what was the point?
You've been on more sets than I have, but I have been on a small handful of advertising sets, and like, sets are manic and they are tiring and they are full of it's not just the actor, there are so many people there, and they are so timed within the minute, and the smallest disruption can make a late night for everyone. So the fact that he was doing this and that it was causing so much disruption and wasting so much time, that they had to then get like a poor runner to get him a wheelchair and have him wheeled from set to the bathroom and back again. Like, I don't know, that makes me so uncomfortable about the hierarchy.
I mean, outside of the respect that it's a genuine method for a lot of people, it is problematic in that sense, because you're right. It's the impact that it has on other people. And the question of it is, how good an actor are you if you can't,
switch on and off
and be able to, there was nothing stopping him doing that in his own time to prepare for the role, but to do it on set,
on,
I don't know,
I just
I'm just a bit dubious of someone's acting ability if they have to rely on that method. Regardless, it seems a bit self-indulgent, but I don't know enough about it to,
I mean, I don't think that the nomination is undeserved, but I also don't know if it would have been who I would have nominated either.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of a nothing one for me.
Yeah,
like,
that's it. It's neither good nor bad. It's just, oh, that was just a film.
Like,
yeah.
he obviously would have had to work with that screenplay as well.
Yeah.
He has done kooky performances before. He's done fantastic performances before, more notably for me, in the earlier in his career.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of feels like he was just going through the motions with this one. Yeah. How much of that was up to him or just the screenplay and the direction? I think it might be in a combination.
Looking at that screenplay, it was by Matt Sazamar and Burke Sharpless, who did screen story by and screenplay by. Just having a little click in. Matt Sazamar also worked on the Lost in Space TV series. He did the story for the 2017 Power Rangers movie, and he did screenplay for Dracula Untold.
So I think they both worked together, from what I saw.
Yeah.
Because there was quite the same titles from them.
And none of those films, unfortunately, have been mad successful, but what they have all been is, like, very big, epic studio takeovers. And so, you know, like, Gods of Egypt is another one they worked on together, and that, I don't have very much memory of it, but I know it didn't hit and it didn't, you know, become very big.
Yeah, they're a bit lacklustre for what they build up. You know, they had a lot of fanfare around them. They had big budgets. Yeah. Like you say, it was those... Oh, Last Witch Hunter I've seen. Didn't you watch that as well? Wasn't that the one we watched stream together? Yeah, that was pretty terrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's just something like linking these together, where you know that kind of cinema experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you're like, I don't really have much expectation for this. It's just like, do you know what I would describe this as, Claire? This is a classic Cineworld Bexy Heath weekend film that you go with your mates, where you're not really caring about the film. It's just something to go and do.
Yeah.
And they all have that feeling of, well, that was a movie. Okay, I'm going to forget about that now.
Yeah.
But they probably cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So looking at Worst Director for Daniel Espinosa, his other credits include the 2017 film Life, the 2012 film Safe House, and a few, I'd imagine they might be Bollywood maybe films.
Oh, Life, was the one with Jake Gyllenhaal, right?
Yes, and I believe so. Yeah, and that got like really high... like, that's really kind of loved by people. And then Safe House is the Denzel Washington, Ryan Reynolds film.
Yeah.
From looking at kind of this UpRocks article interview, it's really interesting. I remember reading it when it's written by Mike Ryan. Shout out to the interviewer. I remember reading it when Morbius came out, and it was quite a fair article. And it definitely makes it seem like he... didn't enjoy his time on Morbius.
Right.
So he was like, he kept bringing it back to his other fans, his other films. And so he says at one point, like, about Morbius, this doesn't feel like one of your movies. And I'm curious, was this what you turned in? Is there something else? Because it feels like at some points there are some scenes missing. I don't believe for a second this is what you turned in.
Someone said that to them in the interview.
Yeah. And,
oh, wow.
And the director replied, these movies are big ideas. And the interviewer, Mike Ryan, again said, because I think you're a very good director, and I think there are some decisions that were made that weren't always in your hands here. And Daniel Espinosa says, you're very sweet, you're very kind. I think that I work at my best when I get a lot of decision power. But in these movies, they're big movies and have a lot of people's interests. It's different processes every time.
Mm. That makes a ton of sense, because look at, you know, we know how things work way more than 50 years ago when it comes to the film industry, and Marvel's been under a spotlight for this for so long. I mean, Edgar Wright was set to direct Ant-Man, and he left for creative differences.
Well, his infamous quote is, I wanted to make a Marvel movie, they did not want to make an Edgar Wright movie.
Yeah, exactly.
That sums up the whole mechanism of these big movies, isn't
and,
it?
And, you know, there's been stuff that's been successful, like Thor with Taika and things like that, but then they run it to death, and it's made by committee, and it always has, but there was still elements of it that worked really well, kept coming back, but now that's starting to get a bit grating for people.
Yeah.
And look, you would never turn down the opportunity to direct a Marvel film and get that exposure and get that experience and get those connections and whatever, but it's such a shame that I hope it doesn't affect people's careers badly, because it's not their fault, I don't think, as much as it would be on a different set.
Yeah, like when you look at, I think, is it Captain Marvel that was directed by the directing partnership who did Short Term 12? Now, I love Captain Marvel. I know I seem to be...
I did. Kind of,
but a lot of people didn't. Men and women, it's not just, you know, it's not, I'm not talking about the trolls that are like, this is shit. I'm talking to people who are like, that was just a disappointing film. Like, not troll people. No offence to troll people. But,
oh no, full offence of troll
people. But I don't know what they've done since. And I think that was a big leap from them to go from these smaller independent products to this kind of big thing. Whereas I think people like the big fellas that did Infinity War and... The Russo brothers, they came from TV. And I think that connection went, because these Marvel movies, and not just the Marvel ones, these big epic blockbusters have so many hands in the pie that I think when you come from TV, you're used to getting notes from the network.
That
you're used
sense.
To having a team of writers. Whereas I think a lot of these kind of smaller independent filmmakers, and even not just independent, but just filmmakers, are so used to having their story, their vision. And I think the crossover doesn't always work. And it just sounds like this guy maybe didn't have the best of time, so it sucks that he has got this nomination. Because I think it's easy, again, I don't even know if the direction was bad.
Mean, I always struggle, and like, I'm so sorry to directors, but I always struggle to be able to fully zone in on that as a single entity, because it's woven throughout everything that the film is. It's really hard for me to single out something like that. But I'm trying to get better at recognizing how to sort of critique that and stuff. But I don't think there was anything wrong with the way that the film came together and how everyone did their job from a director's point of view.
That's it. I think the issue was with pacing. So it either started with the screenplay or ended with the editing. I'd imagine a lot of it was audio, also studio intervention. I don't really think that the direction was the problem here. I think, you know, it was fine.
I think we identified it at the beginning that the problem is the screenplay, right? Whatever it started with, whether it started with something and then it's been chopped up in the edit, potentially, but we'll never really know what that would have been. So we can only go by what it ended up being, which was just pretty lackluster, standard formulaic superhero stuff. For me, the big thing that stopped it being worse was I actually really liked the VFX.
I wasn't sure on them. I thought that I didn't like the face. I didn't like the vampire face.
It was less about that and it was more I liked the movement and the
you liked the kind of paint colours.
I enjoyed that. That was something for me that gave me something that was a little bit more, I can engage with that. I was like, I did enjoy how they were sort of bringing in the different powers that they could do rather than one montage scene of him doing all of that stuff. Some of it's a bit like, like the sonic hearing with the ears. It was like, oh God. But I really liked
bat hearing or something, and we're like, isn't that just sonar?
They try and dumb it down in the screenplay by like being like, oh, so I got echolocation, you know, bat hearing. I'm like, everyone knows what fucking echolocation is, come on. But like, I loved that, like, I don't know, like maybe it's because I've been playing more video games lately, but that was just something that was slightly different to the formula of everything else. And I think for me, the fact that it was vampires and it wasn't just people going smash, throw alien invasion kind of thing, because it was smaller, it did feel a bit better or something. But it just was really going through the paces, is that the right word? Going through the motions, now we have to do this, now we have to do that, and it just glazed over in the end. I'm glad it was only an hour 40, that's for sure.
I feel like there'll be complaints if we don't touch on it. It's not anything to do with the nominations, but the Matt Smith dancing.
Oh, I was waiting for that. The thing is, I'd already seen it on
I actually
social.
Hadn't, but I had been pre-warned. Because I had put on Twitter about watching this and Pinocchio, and everyone was like, I was like, I have to do both of them anyway, but everyone was like, do Morbius, it has a dance scene. It's like, okay.
So what did you think about the dance scene?
just made me a bit uncomfortable. I was like, I think again, it's that thing that we talked about with Venom, that Venom leaned into its campness.
Yeah.
I was like, are we being camp or are we being super serious? What are we doing here, guys?
So the tone didn't fit with the rest of the film. And also didn't really explain who he'd become as a character in his adult life, right?
He's just rich. He's just a rich guy.
Yeah, and I know it doesn't really matter, but all you needed was one line to sort of be like, just to paint him.
Because he didn't seem that bitter in the scene that we saw him in before he gets the vampire blood. He seemed like a nice little rich man.
That's what I mean. There was no clear trajectory with that. And also, like, did he not have parents? Because did the head of the, like, the hospital,
seemed
the children's,
like, his
hospital
caretaker,
need to be the one doing his dialysis every day? Because I think if it ended up being he became such a strong attachment to him because he was vulnerable as a kid, and you know, Michael was still always the favorite because he was in his shadow, which is what they said, but they didn't show it in any way.
They just told us at the end, this is why I've always hated you, even though we were best friends 2 hours ago.
Just silly and lazy, to be honest. Like, show, don't tell.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, something.
So, worst picture. Agree, disagree?
I disagree, to be honest.
Yeah, I would say. I just looked at my kind of least favourite films of the year.
It's a cohesive film at the end of the day. It just suffers from boring more than anything.
Yeah, it would be in my last 10 of the year, in fairness. But
I was just thinking, let me have a look at mine.
I still don't know if it really is the worst thing I've ever seen. I've definitely seen 100 work, but then that's the point of nominations, isn't it? Because a lot of the films best nominated for Best Picture, I'm like, they're not the best I've seen, but they're not bad.
Yeah, and I think this always is a good point as well, is it's just my least favourite. It's not, for me, it's not objectively the worst, like, I can point out why it is bad. It's just not something that I enjoyed.
Yeah, like, when I rank films, it's a combination of, was it good technically? Did I enjoy it?
Yeah.
Would I want to watch it again? Because there is, and it has to be a combination of all three, because there are some films which are so technically beautiful, but I'll put a trashy film above them because I'm like, well, if you told me I had to watch one of them again tomorrow,
exactly,
I want to watch
this.
This
is the thing with art. There's so many layers to it. There's the objectivity and the subjectivity. But I can tell you now that one of the other films that we'll be discussing was fifth from the bottom of my list of 2022, and it was out of 60. So
one of them is 61 out of 62 for me.
Wonderful. Looking forward to finding out what that one is. But yeah, no, I think, no, worst picture it can get away with.
Yeah. Worst actor, Jared Leto.
Nah, again, I think it just suffers from Jared Leto being Jared Leto.
No, it's because it suffers from the whole film being too serious, and he went along with the, I am serious Jared Leto man.
And he just didn't really add anything different. That could have been anyone doing that, you know, and controversial as he is, you'd like to think because of that he could bring a little bit of star power to it, but
he's an Oscar winning actor.
That's like, what I mean, like, it's just a bit like, okay, all right.
At least, you know, at least to House of Gucci he was doing something. Apparently I was the only one that cared for it, but he was doing
Paolo.
Something. He was a Gucci. Okay, worst supporting actress, Adria Arjona. I think we've both agreed.
Absolutely
nonsense.
Not.
Typical Razzie sexism, you know, whatever.
They're like, we have to fill. No, what I reckon is, they're like, we have to fill this category. What other films have we seen that have already got loads? Let's just stick one in there.
And I will say, in fairness to the people that do the ballot, I do a ballot for a different awards thing, and I saw a lot less films this year than in the past few years. And there were a couple of things, especially in supporting actor and actress, where I was like, I don't know. I think I nominated 3 people from Top Gun because I was like, I just don't have people to fill the supporting actor slot. And I was like, right. All that, like, the ensemble cast.
It's silly that you
great.
Have to,
like,
rather than just nominating what you actually think should be nominated for star.
Well, and I think that's a pressure then, because I could have just left them empty, but I was like, no, I want to use my slots, and I guess it would be similar. Okay, worst director, Daniel Espinosa. It's a definite no from me.
Yeah, I don't think he particularly did a great job, but I don't think it was his fault.
Yeah, I don't think he was allowed to direct
it. I think he just delivered on what he was there to do.
Yeah,
essentially. And he had to deal with Jared Leto, so, like,
he had to tell some poor runner that's probably paid less than minimum wage that their job for the day was to wheel Jared Leto.
If anything, he should get brownie points for having to deal with that. And how gracefully he handled that interview.
That interview, yeah. And I will try and remember to link that interview in the show notes. And then 5, worst screenplay.
I would say so.
It's a lazy screenplay for me. It's not worst, it's lazy. It's lazy, yeah, boring screenwriting.
And I'm just thinking, you know, I can only compare it to what else I've seen in that year, because the whole point is that it's specifically for 2022, yeah, right? And I'm looking at the bottom and I'm like, the things that I didn't like about the worst films there aren't screenplay. They're the other technical aspects.
See, my one was screenplay. My worst film of the year was The Adam Project. And that just...
Really?
I just thought it was the most boring, lazy, half-assed film. I just thought there was nothing going on.
No, it was quite mid for me.
So sure. Yeah, I would say the screenplay was better in this than that, but I would agree that it's not a strong screenplay, it's a lazy screenplay.
It's just so formulaic. Yeah. It's as if, why are we doing this? Like it is
what's
become
the point
a factory
in telling
now.
This story?
It's become a factory now. We just need to produce another one to get bums on seats, and I think everyone's starting to catch on to that now. And I can't say I'm particularly ever excited at the moment for new Marvel stuff. Yeah. The only reason I'm excited for Ant-Man is because of Paul Rudd. Yeah. And there's a guy from the sketch show called I Think You Should Leave. Mm. He's like got a cameo.
People love
in
that
it.
Show.
Oh, it's wild. It's absurd. But there's the guy, for people who are listening, it's the a good steering wheel that doesn't whiff out of the window when I'm driving. That guy. For all the people that listen. He's just a really, really old Italian guy, and he's just he's wacky and weird and he's brilliant. And he's probably got the tiniest cameo in it. And that's the only reason I'm excited. Otherwise, I'm like, right, I'm going to be going in watching the same film with a different skin on.
I'm
as
just
I have done every year.
Hoping for at least 5 seconds of Judy Greer's screen time.
Oh, is she in this?
Well, she was in the first two because she's his ex-wife and she's the mother of
that's
the daughter.
That's true. That is
but,
true. I forgot about that.
You know, she was also in the first Jurassic World movie and she never came back to those. So,
That maybe that's what that was missing. Or we'll pop a pin in that one for a later episode. So yeah, so we're going 1 out of 5 for the noms, which really, really reduces it. You know, we've spoken about this today. This is one of the highest nominated films. But so I guess, let us know if you agree, if you think it might should have been nominated for anything else, if you really loved it and thought maybe it was a different kind of award nomination it deserved. We'll see. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We hope you can join us for the next episode where we keep running down that road on the way to the Razzies 2023. See you then.